has come in. This at supper, no, this Monday, November the 1st, 71. Channel 1 over, and a continuation of the visit with Mark, and Cookie has come in. This at supper, this Monday, the 1st of November, 71.
Multiform nature and a discussion of the existentialist view of man. Though his emphasis is upon methodology rather than speech per se, the reader can easily see the connection between method and speech, since the former consists essentially of a particular linguistic style. Tillich wrote that. I mean, there's an excerpt from Tillich, a long excerpt from Tillich.
Well, now, you know what impresses me about that is, why didn't I ever think of that?
Well, what does it mean now?
Now, that's the man that came out here and rode Molly.
Came out with and wasn't it?
Oh, Hellstrom.
Hellstrom.
Yeah, Harold Stein. Religious significance of language. Well, I think he just is too wordy. He could say what he has to say if he says anything in a simple, more simple way.
You mean it appears to be a little bit wordy?
Sure does.
To you?
To me.
Well, yeah. that's your meat, that, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been exposed to a lot of that.
Yeah.
And I've rejected it. But I haven't understood it. I've been, through a lot of college you read this sort of stuff, particularly if you're in philosophy. You know, the logic of religious language, the structure of language, and I just don't swallow it at all. I don't understand it, and when I do understand it, it just seems rather stupid. You know?
Well, now, he didn't talk like that out here, not to me.
You've heard him on campus, have you, too? He might talk like that on campus, huh?
Now, you see, he's one of your daddy's good friends, too.
Yeah.
And your daddy, he supports him.
Very personal.
I don't mean just your daddy, but I mean
I talked to him like there, he did. He broke it down. He didn't talk like that. He broke it down in my language.
Well, I'm not sure anyone can understand this. Even people, if you talk to them on campus and class.
He got polyphonic something with binocular vision.
No, that's just that's a gobbledygook or a lot of. You can say something simpler, the same sort of thing, I'm convinced. If I could find out what he's saying here, I could probably rephrase it, and much more understandable term. But I think he's muddled himself. When a guy has to use language like this, I'm not sure he's clear to himself.
You see that?
Yeah, very good. Just the act. He gave you the book in appreciation. That I don't. No way.
I went to his office and talked to him, man. And he said, "You just wait a minute." And he looked through all his briefcases, his cabinets, and then finally found a stack of those and brought one out and handed it to me. I saw his name on it, and I thought, "Well, now it was nice." And then I knew before I took it that I was in for it.
You're in for it if he asked you a question, how did you enjoy the book? And you're going to be a little corny.
Well, now, you see why those people up on the campus, that little youngsters, it's a minute, you don't realize it, but when you see them perform, you see they're so addled. Now, you can hang over that for a while, you see how you'd be. You wouldn't get to 44th Street. Or if you did, you wouldn't know which way you're going.
I wouldn't know which way to turn. I'm going to tell you what happened to me this morning. Then I got to go. I went in to work, and they said, Cook, I want you to go to Tired Arms and put those anchors in. I said, you mean put the post hole digger on and go to Tired Arms and screw those anchors in the ground? That's right. Okay. I go to the barn, I hook on unhook from my blade, I hook on the post hole digger, and get back on my tractor. Jim comes and says, Cook, go to the welding shop, they're making you an attachment to put those anchors in with. I said, they haven't got it made yet? He said, no. I said, it only takes 15 minutes to make one, what are they waiting on? He said, you don't have a degree.
Yeah.
I never even asked. Didn't even look at it.
Mm-hmm.
He don't either, the stupid bastard.
But he knows what happens when you get one?
He knows what happens when you get one. Okay, I go to the welding shop. They said, you want a piece of pipe? Two. And 9/16 in inside diameter. I said, it don't make any difference if it's 3 inches inside diameter. All I want is a piece of pipe to go over this attachment and flatten to screw them anchors in the ground. No, that'll never work. No, that'll never work. Yes, it will. That's all I want. I'm not going to build that on. Okay, build a son of a bitch. That's just what I told him. I went out, come from my tractor. I sat down, and so help me God, I sat there till noon. They still didn't have it made.
Yeah.
But they made everything to fit. Everything. But the attachment that went on top of the anchor. And it did not fit. And it took me all afternoon to screw 12 anchors in the ground. And I could have done it in 30 minutes. I could have built the piece and put them in the ground in 30 minutes. If it just turned me loose. But I sat there on my tractor. 12 o'clock.
Yeah. All the way from all.
Then you knocked off and went on back over to. I
got off the track and went up to the shop and eat my lunch.
Mr. Lake there?
No. I never saw no bosses until after 3 o'clock this afternoon. After Jim told me what to do this morning, I never saw no bosses. None of my bosses.
Well, they didn't expect you back.
Evidently, when Jim told me, he said, you don't have a degree.
Well, who is it over there? Dodge, you know, working on some place like that. It's not in maintenance or grounds. I don't know what it is, but he makes things.
Works.
He don't have a degree. He can knock him out. Of course, he don't have a degree.
I thought that was pretty good, pretty well phrased.
And he didn't linger. He just moved on.
Just moved. And he didn't expect me on the job all day today. I know he didn't.
Yeah. Did you have enough
sea line? Yes, sir.
You go provide it.
Yes, sir.
The institution got you all the way.
Yeah.
I sure did.
Well, you had that today, and you had old G. Willikins out here yesterday.
But but you can go around the block and guy.
Well, the reason I took off like I did, thinking the stupid thing would follow me.
I know it.
Yeah.
I'll ask him.
Yeah, you did your part.
But he would not. I mean, he absolutely would not. Man, he was on the office cloud yesterday than I ever saw.
Well, he's always on it. You can count on him.
I tell you what, I'd get a windstorm under that cloud. Some way. I'd blow it away. Let him fall.
The only windstorm I can see is the end of the term.
I told him I thought it'd be a mighty good thing if he dropped that class. He had too many of his classes.
Yeah.
Well, he said, I'm not fixing to drop one of my English classes. I said, well, I think three English classes is much too many. And you know, the way you work, the way the guy expects you to work, one's plenty. I just drop it and take it again another time. I didn't get anything. How'd you think it?
Give him a shifting fever.
They've all got their advantages.
Ship up or ship out.
Yeah.
Well, you keep it. How come you still moving around?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I want to buy some more cows.
Trade them.
I want to buy some more cows.
Well, if you're buying like this, buy them by the pound.
I know they're pretty high today. She'd have made money on the market today.
Oh, really?
She sure would.
Going pretty high.
22 cents.
Yeah. You know what I'd do? I'd hang around.
16.
Now, I'd hang around over Lixon over there. You get some of his calls, they'd be better than most people's. He sells those good heifers there for 35 cents. And they're more than just weaning heifers. They're almost big enough to breed.
Well, I'll tell you, like it started, what I'm going to have to buy. I'm going to have to buy something that will calve and I can get some return back within 6-7 months.
Yeah, that's the trouble with the heifers. And then after you get the heifers, she may not be have good calves.
Right.
Right.
It's better to have a cow that you're seeing a calf of.
Yeah.
That's right. Old Santa Fe ranch man out there, he calls those animals, and a lot of times he's got some that that's the wrong color. And you can find out him just telephoning him. Just asking him what he's got.
Well, sir, I'll tell you. Telephone's mighty handy, mighty good. But when I start trading in cows or horses, I want to talk to the man's number.
Yeah, I'm not talking about trading on the telephone. I'm talking about asking him on the telephone if he's got anything to trade.
Well, now, I'm going to tell you something about asking him. Anybody can make any kind of a face over the telephone.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, I've got just what you need.
He won't do that.
He may not do you that way, but sooner or later he's going to catch a sucker and he's going to throw it to you.
He don't need to catch suckers. He's got plenty of doctors. Doctors just standing there waiting for him.
Not any fun on the telephone, is it, to you?
No, it ain't. It's too quick.
Well, go on out there, then. That's Lake Butler.
I'm one of those.
There's no distance from where you've been going.
No, sir. I'm one of those.
Just stop in there and ask him. Look around, don't ask him.
Take you
one out. Oh, I really pulled a boner one time. He had about a dozen big, fine, beautiful cows that he didn't want. And they'd been on that rye. Oh, they were handsome things and about ready to calve. And I have really blundered time and time again. I had a chance to buy some of that, I could think of my blunders. just hit my head against the wall. I'm telling you, oh Lord, when I think of those blunders, they were better cows than any I have or will have.
Gosh, could he do? Good luck to trading.
18 minutes to make Gainesville.
Oh, look, well, hurry. I mean, out. Don't hurry to Gainesville, but hurry out.
I'll wait a few minutes.
Yeah.
Now, me and Toby's going to look at some cows. I'm supposed to pick him up at 7:30.
Toby?
Yeah.
No, he ain't
playing. Toby's a good man. Yeah, but it'll put us back in so late.
Huh?
It'll put us back in so late.
He's all right. To do business with.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Is he up in the world, or is he just
drifting, just like me?
Marvin's getting up in the world.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
He acts like it.
Yes, sir. Him and Bruce Townsend going to parties out there. I got to go.
Okay, go good night.
Now, what about that? What can I do about that?
Thanks, sir. Guys, everybody's got a feel.
Well, this is something.
But we're not talking about.
This is something of steam. And I guess a guy can give something of himself, and it might not be anything that is in common with the person that recipient receives the gift.
Yeah.
Well,
he was.
I don't know. I wonder if he talks like this all the way through. Looking good.
He got me. I can say about that.
I seen the first part of the book. Mike, I don't know what the language is like.
What is your? Now this is not your field.
This has something in common with what I've acquainted with. In that he's concerned with language, the structure of language, the various uses to which language can be put, and all the aspects of the use of language, emotional aspects, for example, the informative aspects of language, all the different uses of language, is studied in philosophical analysis, which was unfortunately philosophical analysis or language analysis. Was the sort of philosophy I went through in grad school. It was that particular style of philosophy in Chapel Hill, at the Department of Philosophy. And so I was exposed to about 4.5 years, my length, and, well, actually, I guess 3, because I got away from it as quick as I could on my dissertation. It wasn't like that at all, except for some concession to it, so they'd say, okay, we'll let him pass. But through about 3 years, I had lots of courses dealing with the structure, logical structure of language. Ideal languages, such as logical systems, with the symbols and the rules, like mathematics, as well as ordinary language. So it was all linguistically oriented. And that's what's in common with this. Now it appears that he he's not so oriented around the logical structure of language, so much as what it says about man in society. You know, man as he experiences things, but this would be somewhat of my interest if that's what he's concerned with, and yet I'm not at all fond of the language he uses. The phrase, he says here, the phrase rhetoric of history does not contain or imply religious words or implications. I mean, rhetoric of history, the phrase, I mean, I'm just not in tune with that sort of concern with the phrases. Oh no, here's got, although our dialogicians and speech thinkers antedate most of those involved in theological hermeneutics and radical or death of God theology, their concern seems particularly relevant just at the point where the interest of death of God in hermeneutic theologians, you know. Oh, I could reread and reread that sentence. Now, I could not make any sense out of it.
Well, now, is that what you used to do?
No, it was better than this. Of course, I was exposed to some of the gobbledygook has been used by some people to characterize this sort of use of language, needless use of fancy words. Just when you resort to something like this, I'm not too sure that you know what you're talking about, really, because so many people who use words that you can't find in a dictionary, like dialogician, you couldn't find that in the dictionary. Speech thinkers, you know, coining their own words. Hermeneutic theologians. Hermeneutics would be found in the dictionary, but most of the a lot of the words I've been kind of in the paragraph you showed me that I've just read, if you asked him what they meant, ask Harold Stamer what he means, I think he'd have a problem telling you what he means by his words. You'd find out that he's not so clear about what he says as it would assume that he would be if he uses this sort of language. That's my experience. People that use this sort of language, when you ask them what they mean and really get into them, you ask them questions, and they're going to have a lot of trouble telling you. But then it's a game. It's a language game. If you're not, you know, all sorts of people have their own styles of language. As Cookie said, Cookie said something that was really, you know, true. It's not Cookie's language. I don't know whether that Stamer could. I don't know whether Stamer could understand Cookie.
Yeah.
His language.
I wonder. It's a long way to go, isn't it?
Yeah, but the point is, Stamer only uses this for when he's talking to a few people who have the interest that he has. It's a small circle that play a game. Just like kids today have, some kids have their own style of speaking, which.
How did you get started in that type of thought, Mike?
Unfortunately, I got started by finding myself into a graduate school, being accepted at a graduate department, which was very faddish, very stylish. You know, it went with certain styles and was very, the word is provincial, I guess, and had very narrow conception of what is proper in the way of philosophizing. So they frowned on anything but concerned with language analysis.
Yeah.
But they'd pick up this book and they'd say essentially what I said about it.
How did you get into philosophy?
Well, I got into philosophy because I was raising questions for a long time which weren't answered in physics,
yeah.
Which weren't answered in special disciplines. For example, I wanted to know from the physicist,
yeah.
Just why he uses certain talks in a certain way about light, for example, as having being a wave or being in particles. And so I keep asking him questions, and finally I just got, well, that's just the way we speak. And that didn't satisfy me. And they weren't concerned, the physicists weren't concerned with their tools, their methods. They assumed their method in order to, and the problem was how to, come to an understanding of observable phenomena, assuming certain methods. And I had questions about the methods. Now, and they didn't raise those questions. I had a question about religion, which aren't answered by theologians. I was concerned with literature. I thought about literature for a while. Questions weren't answered in literature that I was raising. And so I got into philosophy because I had simple questions about trying to make sense out of my own life. Like, a very simple question. Everyone ponders over, like, what death means for me. They're very personal questions. And unfortunately, I found out that philosophy, but too late, that philosophy's language analysis is concerned with, how are you using the word death? I just don't care about that. I don't know. I want to know what you think about death, and I want to know what you think about birth. I want to know what you think about this guy who in the country who's living the way he does and is very happy, and just why is he happy and I've got so much education and I'm so unhappy? Why is that the case? No, very personal questions that bother me, and they weren't answered, and. They are answered by some philosophers, but not by the graduate study that I was exposed to. Unfortunately, those philosophers are answered.
So
not stamer,
it was a sort of a trap.
It was a trap. Grad school. Yeah.
The questions you wanted answered were unanswerable to start with.
Well, let me tell you something.
And then you got in a place where the answers got to be more and more difficult, you might say.
Well, if you ask me now whether I go to college, I'd say I may go to undergrad school for a little while, but I'd probably go into something like crafts, or carpentry if there was a trade school. I'd be exposed to a little liberal arts and hopefully an experimental college. I don't want to be exposed to any more large classrooms with the usual sort of lecture. I couldn't go through that again. So I wouldn't go through the college years that I went through if I do it over again. And so far, it was, you go so far in grad school, some people ask me, why did you
keep on?
It's irrational. I can't explain it. It's just when you go so far, you say, well, might as well finish it. And I began realizing the pointlessness of it, the absurdity kind of early in life, before it started, even high school, I got the notion that the more degrees you have, the better person you are. This wasn't explicitly said, but it was somehow implicit in our environment, especially my immediate environment and my family, that the more degrees you have, the more worthwhile a person you are to listen to be heard. And just several years ago, midway through grad school, I said, that's nonsense. I was meeting people who dropped out of school, didn't want to even enter college. That absolutely fascinated me by their conception of the way they thought about their lives and my life, and the way they could speak about it, and their excitement over Shakespeare, their excitement over Jesus, and their insights into what they said. And it didn't come from any sort of college experience. And in fact, when you saw them picking up Shakespeare, it was when they dropped out of college. They began reading Shakespeare, and they began reading with some, real exuberance, with some fascination. So it was, but if you go that far, continue. Don't drop it.
And one thing leads to another, those big lecture halls.
Can you avoid them? Do you teach in big classes?
No, I don't teach any, but there's plenty of them, you know.
Yeah. And the worst thing it must be is for those big classes to occur at the introductory levels, where you really do need these. The introductory levels are the most, you know, the word for it, I guess, is profound or deep or something like that. They have more to say, more meaning than some of the seminars where you had the language games played that this is an example of.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Mark, you have an experience. I'd like to, you know, sort of keep up with your thinking, the way you work it out. Now, you see, on the way out here this afternoon, we clashed several times, and I forget how did we start that?
Oh, well, you were, we're discussing Suzanne's, what I described as her sense of humor, and Guy said, you said that you described her as having a light touch. That's what, and you said you couldn't understand, or you didn't use the word humor. It wasn't part of your vocabulary. It was academic or something like that. It was, and I tried to rephrase what you said, and you said, Mark, I've noticed or something like that that you rephrase, that you're constantly saying over again, trying to say over again what I'm saying, and you're not doing it. You're trying to. And then I said in defense of that, well, I got two reasons for that. One is to try to find out if I really did understand what you said. And one way I can do that is to see if I can summarize it. So it's not motivated by any sort of concern of myself as so much as trying to listen to you, trying to get what you're
trying to get straight.
Yeah. And the other reason for my repeating what other people say is that sometimes I do it and then add a variation in order to suggest that there's something presupposed or implicit that the person who said the comment didn't realize. And so we got off into
yeah.
That's
yeah. Let me tell you. A restatement of it.
Yeah.
Oh, I know where it was. Let me tell you, Mark.
Yeah.
I know where it was.
Yeah.
Now, this was my own experience, and I couldn't remember where it was.
Mm-hmm.
But at the beginning of the Channel 5, the educational, NET, you know, the educational network,
mm-hmm.
The New York Times had this remarkable program with Tom Wicker and another fella, and then one of the older men there in the Times. What's his name, Faye?
Marco.
All right. Marco invariably would restate what they said, and he would just get in their hair something awful. And Tom Wicker would sit there and say, Mr. Marco, I didn't say that. And, you know, I got so I'd just sit there, you know, and I'd get nervous all over, just waiting for Markle to restate what he said, and for Tom Wicker to tell him, Mr. Markle, that's not what I said.
Well, you know,
now that's what it was,
you
and
know
I
something?
Pull on you.
And when you're facing a public, especially when you're exposed to an audience, you know, that tactic, rephrasing what another person said, is often a way of pointing up its absurdity. And what you do is rephrase it, but you want to show up the person, but you rephrase it in a way to show up how foolish what is what the other person said. But now when you're just in dialogue, for me, of course, we don't have an audience. Often when we speak, for example, in a car, it's a sincere attempt when is this what you said? And I don't care to argue with you at all. It's a technique I use for trying to get myself to listen better. And let me ask you this. If I don't think you could use that technique very well. I don't think you would want to. But I wonder about it. For example, we went to a store to buy some staples, you know, some jiggers, as you call them. and you have this wonderful way of getting the people in conversation, and you got a woman in the conversation who worked there, one of the clerks, and she was describing how to make a bonnet. Now, if you you have an interest in the way people say what they do, the quality of their voice, but now if you also had an interest in their content, just what they are saying, then you might be driven, you might employ the sort of thing, or might use the sort of technique that I'm using, namely try to, well, now, is this what you are saying? Is this what you were saying about making a bonnet? I don't think you could. It would have been possible for you to rephrase her instructions as to the making of a bonnet. And so you wouldn't, in my conception of things, from my point of view, be listening to her, really listening to her. But you've said some things recently that has said, well, now maybe there's another way of listening. And that is not so much at what the person has said, but how they say it. And that must be what you're concerned with. If that's what you're concerned with, then you wouldn't be using the sort of, you wouldn't, you know, trying to rephrase it, I guess.
Well, I would listen to what you said about the bonnets. I wouldn't get it exactly straight. But see, once she starts reporting on her bonnet, I can't stop her and ask her to put in the footnotes.
Oh.
Then it'll make it heavy. So I've got to wait my chance. Some other time.
I see.
You see, when she's just sitting there doing nothing, I say, now just about that bonnet, I kind of forget how they put them back there.
Yeah.
See?
Well, I see. That's, you know, you could do that. Yeah. And that would enable the conversation to continue.
Well, it keeps the lighter touch.
Yeah.
Keeps her.
But the hardest thing to do of all, and I've kind of made myself, I committed myself to this, and maybe I shouldn't. And I'm going to get away from it because I see that it does kind of annoying. And it is a very hard thing to be able, honestly, sincere attempt to rephrase what another person has said and to do so with the attempt to get it exactly what they said. And to, in fact, use their language as much as possible, because that really is a test of whether or not you listen to them. And it's that sort of listening that I'm trying, because I used not to listen to people at all.
Oh, really?
Books were more important than people.
Yeah.
For me, for many, many years. And so, just lately, in the last several years, I've used that technique to try to get myself to listen. And if I didn't listen, I'd say I'd annoy the other person. I would annoy the other person if I didn't rephrase it correctly, and that would be one of the, that'd be a good result. So, okay, well, now, just what, repeat what you said then. Then I'd try again. Well, now, this is what you said. And it's a great, closer and closer approximation, and finally they say, yeah, okay, now that is what I said, you see.
Mm-hmm.
By then we're angry at each other, you're right.
Yeah.
So it may...
But you are making an effort to listen.
That is the reason behind it. It's not for an audience, and if it was for an audience, I might use the technique philosophers use that in forums and debates, whether it's for seminars, to, we'll do it with variation and an implicit argument. To show how foolish what is what the other person said. But when you're just concerned with, you know, in a dialogue, for me, it's a test of myself. If I can't rephrase what you said, if I can't, in fact, use your words, then I really haven't come to grips with you. I haven't gotten into your world at all. And so it's, I keep at it and I keep at it, but it can be self-defeating because you...
You see, Faye, Mark has got a, he's worked out a method that way his brain works. And the only difference in him and me is I found out long ago that my brain didn't work. And unless it just came to me, I might as well go home and sit down.
He can't sit down and say, now let's intuitiveness.
Well, I tell you, if I got, if Stamer was here, and if I was in just a dialogue situation with Stamer, I would, Mr. Stamer, I would, I would be in quite a bit of argument with him.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think he's making sense. I don't think that he was questioning what he's saying here, and I would use part of I would be rephrasing. Well, now is this what you mean? Then it would be not. It would be I have two purposes behind it. One is to try to really get at what he's saying, and be honest, but also I would sense with a stamer, a guy who wants to play, who wants to play a little professional game with certain rules. And I would, so I would use that technique with some other sort of moves that philosophers make in order to point up some of the absurdities and to that I would sense from something like this, something particular that was said. But with you, I don't see that we're playing games, you see. I don't see that you're playing any professional game, that you want to argue. And so for you and for most people I meet, outside of the classroom, it's a sincere way of testing myself.
Well, now, he's using the word speech, and you see, his use of the word speech and mine would be not the same world.
Could you talk with him when he was out here? Cookie could, because I guess as Cookie said, he kind of, well, he didn't talk.
He stayed on Molly most of the time.
And talk about Molly.
Well, it's just
he has a way of talking about a professor at Princeton, his horse, and things like that. So that his world is right elevated. That is his small talk.
Very good.
Now what, but Cookie's talk, such as we just heard, now Cookie has a gift for reporting. It's clear, it's informative, and it's interesting. And it's some of the finest reporting I've heard. He's done it right here. I can't, with this thing in mind, I don't see, I can't see that Cookie's gift for language would have any relevance at all to him. But I see, to me, Cookie has a gift for language and he doesn't. I mean, anybody can use that sort of language. I used to admire the people who spoke French in a national language. But what they did, they spoke it in the dictionary sense, in the etymological sense. It required no ability at all. No knowledge of language. Or no knowledge. They could still get by in French.
Mm-hmm. Would you say Cookie has a? Would you say that you get an idea of Cookie's philosophy? You know, what he thinks about his life and about how to deal with people from the way he reports.
Well, now, you see, you've got to choose your categories. That's what I said to you about the preacher a while ago.
But philosophy is a term that, a word that I don't find academic at all. I find it, in fact, battled around so much that almost anything counts as philosophy.
That's right.
So I think Cookie would, in fact, say, well, my philosophy, he wouldn't say it normally, but if I don't like his philosophy. Cookie, I think, would find that to be a phrase that he would be comfortable with. I don't like this guy's philosophy. And he'd mean by that something that I could understand far more than what most philosophers say about philosophy.
Well, now, he's never abstract.
Well, philosophy can be very concrete. Be how you can.
As you were saying it there, though, Cookie would never make a statement of that sort.
Uh-uh.
Nobody I know in the countryside would.
I don't. Well, they wouldn't say something like, "I like that guy's philosophy."
Mm-mm.
He wouldn't say that, or because you know they could mean by that just the way that guy deals with people.
Sometime in religion, they'll say. It's not religion, they'll say, that is false. He just don't believe in Jesus. Now, and the meaning there, that's still not abstract.
Well, someone will say, well, he's just not religious. Well, is religious abstract? I don't know. Is religious philosophy? I didn't know that. I thought maybe that they would use the word religion a lot, and they'd say, this guy's religious, just as they might say of philosophy. This guy's got a good philosophy. I mean by that, this guy is down to earth. I can deal with this guy. But the cookie might say, I don't like this guy's philosophy. And mean by that, that Stamer just doesn't talk about his experiences when he's alive, when he's on the farm. He just doesn't talk about them.
Well, now, I'll tell you, Mike, I told you that. We've talked about that out here. I was trying to deal with some of the people out here. I didn't have a proposal. When I bought this place or made a payment on it, I didn't have in mind living out here. I was just going to have that old trailer that used to be over there.
Mm-hmm.
And the magnolia tree fell over, and I had to put it over here where I had a little shade. I actually put it over here where I'd have all the buildings in one row.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't hem in, but I'm hemmed in in other ways. And the people who came out here just beat me. Came out here to beat me. And it was unpleasant and unprofitable. And somewhere along the line, it was just a bad situation. There wasn't anything I could do about it. And I think we talked to you about that one time. This boy over here, Sims, used to come, he didn't have a job then. And he'd come over here and ride Noopy.
Oh, yeah.
You heard Faye talk about
that. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Well, that's it. Now, that's the first tour we got into the countryside. The very first. Now, and I've had disastrous situations. I mean, knock down, drag out. I know we never did that exactly, but it was the next thing to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was serious misunderstanding. And, really were. Now the first headway I actually made was when I fixed up the tape and taped some of that talk and listened to it.
Because we weren't hearing.
We weren't hearing what they said.
What this, and just like you, we weren't hearing.
Well, that's a way of, you know,
and
repeating. They're repeating
right.
What they said,
that's
but you're
right.
Not asking them. And that's probably better, because if you asked them, now, let me repeat what you said,
yeah.
Then they
yeah.
Probably think you're
but
arguing
you
with
you
them.
That's right.
That's right.
But
you
could actually, that I see.
Uh-huh.
So that actually is, I think,
yeah.
Some of the things that I've been trying to do, but it's a I can see the
it's
better.
Very difficult.
Yeah.
I can see that yours has advantages.
Well, you see, you have this extraordinary sense of honesty, which I never was
no.
I never had that. You see, all of that, you see, I have to manipulate people. But that didn't worry me. I wasn't going to publish it or anything, you see. It was just here. And actually enabled us to live together. That's what the way it worked out. And,
yeah, I'm really, really surprised at what taping can do for.
Yeah.
See, it's enabled us to understand Cookie.
Yeah.
If
it hadn't been for that, Cookie would have been gone from here long ago.
We could never.
You see, the truth is not in him.
I don't
understand.
What do you mean by that?
You don't know where he's going, 44th Street. You don't know who he's going to see.
Oh, I see. So he's a guy who's not straight.
Well,
straight.
That's
just,
right.
It's just Cookie, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Right.
But
you see,
he could sit here and
yeah.
Tell you that he's good. He is going someplace tonight, and he doesn't. He might be doing something quite different.
Yeah. But we had
oh, yeah.
To find that out.
Yeah. Well,
and that could be
you're not
repeated.
Looking, you're not looking. That's not actually important.
Yeah. Right.
But that's not really the thing that's important.
No.
I
tell
okay.
You the big thing that it was is that I would expect something of him.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see, my expectation could go for 6 months, and they would hardly get any signal from me at all that I was thinking that they weren't coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, you see, I'd have enough.
Yeah.
The expectation. And I learned not to expect anything. That is to say, not have that expectation hanging over. If you expect it, don't bring it up, clear it up. Get out from under it. Is that right?
So you just don't have those worries anymore about counting on someone to...
Well, it's not my worry. It gets them.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
They don't want to live under that expectation.
Oh.
And they sense it just like
the
that.
The light may be behind what you said about Cookie's offering. Of course, Cookie may have said in a joking way that he would had an apology. He might have been sincere. I don't know.
Well...
And he said, I don't want your apology. And you probably really meant that. That you don't, or maybe you're just joking.
No, they knew what they were telling me about this story yesterday, so they knew what they were talking about.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see.
That was understandable.
I thought,
but there's just the whole
mistake
or
something.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Well, now that's so the tape actually has enabled this place to exist. It had been gone long ago if I hadn't had the tape.
And
I have gone through. I have made all the blunders on the taping. You see, all of them.
But it's enabled you
to get
them to repeat.
To hear.
And repeat and repeat what they
understand.
Said. And
it's right.
Really, I
and,
see,
and,
yeah.
And you just...
Yeah. And if you ask them to repeat...
How many conversations have you had just with just around anywhere that you can really keep it straight after you?
I can't.
Yeah.
This
I can't.
Is our trouble too, Mike.
Yeah.
It's not just... Yeah.
The way it was said as well as what was said.
That's
I can't
right.
retain it.
Yeah. Suzanne can.
Any kind of memory?
Yes, because she has a light touch. She doesn't retain it in her memory. That faculty called memory is something that is oughtn't to never be used.
So that's not what you would say about her. She has a light touch, and that's enabled her to.
Yeah.
It's just with her.
Yeah. No, she developed it. She couldn't do it when I first saw her. She learned it working with me. But I didn't develop it. I can do pretty good. I can do it. But it's an effort with me, and with her, it's a gift. And it's, she does it with ease. I could show you some of those pieces of her reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And see, the only people that that come out here, that is, keep coming, are the ones who come out and report.
Yeah.
I see you reporting now. But people also ought to use a typewriter to report.
Yeah.
And report with that same light touch that Suzanne has.
Yeah.
Now you see how I jumped to the day? You heard me.
And they're in town.
How you jumped me?
Jumped her.
Oh, no, I didn't understand what was behind it. No, I didn't. You all were. I don't know what
she has written out, typed out these fine reports about Miss Guthrie.
Yeah, and you weren't entirely pleased by some situation.
They are beautiful. Now she hasn't done Mr. Weaver.
Oh yeah,
and he's
okay.
Her favorite.
I see.
And she hadn't done Miss Chitty. And Miss Chitty is a very top violinist. Has the greatest skill of anyone we've talked to.
Yeah.
Herself in reporting. And Suzanne had none. I jumped Suzanne, and I did it in these terms. Very light touch. It'll take. I mean, she can't ignore it. It'll stay with her. And she has to have those things. I said to her, Suzanne, just a matter of mortality. Remember that? I said, Faye's, some of her most gifted friends have just been lost in sinkholes. And it's frightening to think what has happened to some of her marvelous friends. I just wouldn't even want to say it to you.
Well, now that I don't quite, because that seems to indicate that maybe reporting to you is not just a... It's not just a scholarly sort of thing. It's also a sincere attempt to keep someone in your life.
No. What I was doing is putting a little fire crack under it. And I said to her, you see, with all your gifts, this will happen to you. Some big semi will run you down.
Some big what?
Semi.
What's a semi?
Semi truck.
Truck trailer.
He just.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's not joking. It's serious.
Wow.
It can do it. With all the chances that she takes, She has a bicycle, rides in the traffic. Now she's riding that motorcycle, you see. Yeah. She's just flirting with mortality. And what I said to her was that Mr. Weaver deserves... Now, Tarwater, you see, she knows. Old Tarwater has to be buried. That's in one of the books that she read. Old Tarwater adopted this boy so he'd have somebody there to bury him.
Yeah.
And she owes it to Mr. Weaver.
Yeah.
He has been of that much service to her and lifted her spirits. And she owes it to him to do those eulogies in a way, those little sketches such as she has turned out on Ms. Guthrie. She owes it to him.
This is her gift.
That's a gift.
So you see it as not merely satisfying your own scholarly interest, but as being something you owe to another person to be able to get what they are, to see what they are.
Sure. It's nothing to do with God.
Nothing to do with God.
Well, it's nothing to do with just
scholarly...
Another piece of mortality on her part. She uses such extraordinary poor judgment. She took a Crip course in colonial history, American history. And of all the courses that you take, the history department is one that has no Crip courses in it. And colonial American history is about as dull as you can find. It's as slow as you can find. There's nothing in American history, at least until Jefferson, you see. Franklin and Jefferson, later part. She gets hung up on that. It takes her out of circulation. Mr. Weaver will be gone.
Yeah.
And then she can't do it. You see,
as soon
as he's 6 foot under, the whole thing will change and she won't have the light touch. It'll be a eulogy then, really. But now, you see, it can be a sort of meeting. And she owes it to him, to herself. Almost posterity. It's such a beautiful thing that she can do. But she's just a child, you see. And she gets caught. You see, all the institutions have such traps.
Mm.
None of them work in favor of a man anymore.
Yeah.
The one thing you can't trust anymore is an institution. Marriage. The Department of Philosophy, all of them, you see, will trip you.
Mm.
And it don't take them long to do it. All you got to do is believe in them, and that's the end of you.
And go by their rule.
Yes, sir. The only salvation is a position of doubt that is not worth a tender damn. That'll keep you on guard.
And the Suzannes of the world, Mark. Now, you had focus and direction, but there's very few girls that we've ever known.
Yeah, they can't get through.
You see, that's even in my field. You see, the girls always have to take care of Uncle Jojo, or they always have to bake a cake, or they always have to, they're tied.
Yeah.
And a girl will more than anybody, and here's this girl with all this gift, and somebody has to sort of put a firecrack on her to keep her going.
And I can do anything, Suzanne, and she won't be mad at me.
No.
She's been working with me since she came here, the fall of 16.
Mm-hmm. She's fantastic. And it's not Guy and scholarship.
And she's as close to me, I guess, as a child ever was.
Yeah.
But she just loves to fret him.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
She, all these chances, you see, mortality, the first time I said over and over again.
I wonder what was behind it, and that's really illuminated something.
You
understand what reporting is for you. It's something that you owe to some other people. I didn't realize there's that kind of thing behind it.
Oh, that's it.
It's not something.
Well, I appreciate much more now because I was.
To play with.
I thought it was just a scholarly game.
Mm-hmm.
Like
see, I work
an anthropologist.
With I put all sorts of time on because he doesn't know how much time I put. You see, it enables me to live with him. You see, and I learn from him. And
but you're genuinely concerned about Cookie's welfare and about maintaining.
Sure. And
if he doesn't come here, you wonder when in the week, you wonder what happened to
sure
him.
Sure we
do.
Sure we
do.
Not just because you're going to miss out on reporting,
oh, no.
But because
oh,
you're
no.
just genuinely concerned.
Oh, no.
Okay. Okay,
but
I just didn't realize
this.
Yeah.
See.
But I see that's yeah. you. You ought to know that without having to be told.
Well, I tell you, I don't know. Maybe I should. I couldn't see this other dimension to it. I couldn't see that this was behind reporting. I saw it as a scholarly sort of
yeah.
thing. This is your classroom, and you bring the university here, and this whole thing is a big classroom for you, and you're treating these people around here as an anthropologist would treat people, you know, collecting facts on. Which
see,
is very different from, yeah, which is very different from, you know, genuinely being wrapped up in someone's welfare.
Trying to understand, you see, you oh, gave yeah. us the clue when
they
you said you were trying to listen.
Yeah, and that was my
right.
technique. And then you suggested that reporting for you is
yeah.
that is that sort of thing, getting trying to get another person's world, but not face-to-face so that you would annoy them. By asking them, that is kind of annoying now that you've drawn attention to it.
Restate it so you can understand.
Is this what you mean? No. Well, let me try harder. Is this what you mean? No. Okay, I could see it that way. That would get a person to shut up pretty fast.
Like that. And move, and turn him loose. Turn him loose. Make a statement and turn him loose. Turn it loose fast. There's nothing.
I don't understand that now, because I have difficulty really. I'm sincere about this. I'm not quick of mind. And so I have used for a way of examination. And that's why, one reason I went into philosophy, because I had too many physicists, too many
yeah.
theologians, too many English professors who say something and say, well, now this is what he means. Now we move on. And I just will not take that. I want to
yeah.
stay still. Let me hold. Now, what did you say?
Yeah.
Just what do you mean by that? Really? I don't think that's what he says at all. Hold it now. Don't go on with the class. I know it's over in 50 minutes.
Yeah.
But by golly, I want to understand what you're saying now.
Yeah.
Now, another way, I guess, is as you said, to get it and drop it. And I could do that only if I was quick of mind. Because I really want
no.
to understand people. So I kind of go back to a statement they said, and I say, bring that up again. What did you say a few minutes ago?
Yeah. Well, you see, that makes it so heavy. It changes the whole thing.
Oh, I see. For me, it's a genuine attempt to understand it, but
you're cerebrating so hard, you see, that there's no possibility of seeing it. The cerebration is so tense.
It's an intense effort to try to understand what is said, not to argue with them.
Yeah. But understanding is a lower gift.
I don't see it. I don't see understanding as in the clouds at all. I see it as getting to a person's feelings, perhaps. Dealing with their feelings. And if I can somehow... Is this what you said? Oh, then it might strike my feeling in me and I can... That I've had. I don't see it as high in the clouds as you see it. Understand?
I don't see it high in the clouds. I see it as
abstract. I don't see it.
No, I see it as sort of a nuisance.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a low gift. It's a very low gift. It's like honesty. You know, nobody wants to go around making a point of being honest or sincere. You assume those things. And when the occasion arises, just...